I've got the young American cellist John Henry Crawford on the phone with me. First of all, let me welcome you to the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, now you have accomplished quite a bit for your career thus far. You were Young Artist of the Year, named by Classical Recording Foundation, and you also won the Prieto Cello Competition in Mexico, which is a big, important competition for young cellists. So now you have your debut album. It's called Dialogo, which comes from one of the tracks that's on the disc, but in the larger sense, it means dialogue. And in your notes, you talk about how dialogue is a theme that runs throughout these three different works you've got on here. Why don't we start with that idea of dialogue? Tell us a little bit about the recording itself and what ties together the music of Johannes Brahms and Dmitri Shostakovich and Jerzy Ligeti on this recording.
Absolutely. Well, you know, making this recording was really, really special for me because I got to work with a longtime friend and collaborator, Victor Santiago Asuncion, the pianist on the album. And we worked with Adam Abeshouse and recorded it, you know, in about 3 or 4 days. And, you know, this theme of dialogue, it's applicable to, I think, many different works of music. And the concept of dialogue is kind of ever-present in any time you have works of chamber music with multiple players. But with these pieces in particular, I felt that there was a more present aspect and a more obvious aspect of dialogue. And that's what kind of intrigued me to want to explore this idea. The Ligeti, what's fascinating about this piece is it is a solo cello work. Yet, intertwined inside of this, you know, solo work, you have multiple characters who are talking with each other on a solo instrument. And so there's kind of this irony where you have, you know, one cello, yet multiple voices within this piece talking to one another. And so in that sense, I think the Ligeti is one of the more sort of unique aspects where you can find the dialogue.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Ligeti while you have it in your mind right now. This is a piece that's in two movements. It's fairly short. They're like 4 minutes or so a piece. And when Ligeti wrote this piece back in the late 1940s, early 1950s, it wasn't really performed or brought to light for quite a while, although now it's really well known. Is that right?
Yes. It's played, you know, the world over by cellists. You know, and it's one of those pieces that it didn't really have a, like you said, didn't really have a big reputation. And then, you know, I'd say in the late 1990s, maybe early 2000s, it really started to get to build and build to where nowadays, you know, it's synonymous with the Kodály Sonata. You know, if you're going to learn a solo cello piece, well, there's Ligeti, there's Kodály, which is a very famous solo sonata. And the sort of story behind the piece is an interesting one because it's this classic idea of unrequited love where Ligeti, he fell for a fellow student, Anus Virani, who was a cellist. And, you know, he was in love with her and he decided he was going to write this piece for her. And at the time, it was just the first movement of the cello sonata. And so within this movement, you have this sort of love duet where these multiple voices are speaking with one another, responding, pleading, and then singing together. And after all this, you know, the student kind of said, okay, yeah, maybe I'll take a look at that. And didn't really perform it or anything, didn't really give Ligeti maybe the time of day. And so so the story goes, many years later, he revisited the piece and decided, you know, after he was, you know, more famous, that he would write a second movement. And the second movement is very much kind of a possibly a retort to that. So it's an interesting contrast to the first movement.
Well, Well, it should be said that it's not an easy piece, and I guess that explains why it's played so often by, you know, cellists getting into conservatory or that sort of thing, or playing for an orchestra. It's one of those audition-type pieces. It really puts you through your paces being for the solo cello, so there's a lot of expressivity and probably a lot of room for your own interpretation. Was this a piece that you learned specifically for this disc, or had you already worked on it before?
It's actually a piece that I've studied on and off for probably over a decade.
Yeah.
And it's one of those that really stuck with me. I think, you know, as a cellist, we're always looking to broaden our repertoire, and especially the solo repertoire. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have the Bach suites and pieces like the Kodály Sonata, the Kasado suite for solo cello. And this is one of those that, as you mentioned, you know, it's more concise. The movements are about 4 minutes each, and it's something that you can sort of bring out, you know, whenever needed, and if you want a sort of short but very impactful work that, you know, you can play in under 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And as you said, again, with all the gymnastics on the cello in the second movement, it's one of those that certainly puts you through your paces and is a good litmus test for, you know, auditions and so forth.
Tell our listeners a little bit about you. You are originally from Shreveport, is that right?
That's right. I was born and raised in Shreveport, Louisiana, and started cello in my mother's Suzuki program at age 5. She runs the largest Suzuki program in Louisiana. It's got about 150 students. And I was one of 4 boys, and we alternated. The oldest played violin, and then cello, and then violin, and then I ended up with cello.
Yeah, so obviously a musical family, which leads me to the story of your cello. I'm reading here that it was smuggled out of Austria by your grandfather. Can you tell us the story behind that?
Yes. So my grandfather, when he was about 29, you know, close to the age that I am now, I'm just a year younger than he was at the time, he sort of saw the writing on the wall and decided that it was time to leave his home country. He was from Austria and lived in Innsbruck. And this was about 7 weeks before Kristallnacht. Mm. And he saw the climate changing, you know, the social and political climate changing so much that he didn't feel like he had a future there anymore. He felt that he needed to get out of Austria and out of Europe. And so he made the difficult but life-changing decision to leave Europe completely, leave his parents. He tried to convince them to come, but, you know, they didn't see this as much. And ultimately, you know, he bought a Nazi travel passport on the black market so that he could take a train through Germany. And he ended up in Lithuania, and then he went to Latvia, and he awaited a sponsor to certify his immigration to the U.S. It's a much longer story than I have time to tell here now, but, you know, he was the only passenger on a cargo ship to get to England, and then he had to go back to recover instruments that he had smuggled out to Switzerland from Austria. And so this cello that I play on is one of those instruments. He knew an American boy who made regular trips to Switzerland, and he had them bike them out of Austria because the Austrian exit tax was whatever you owned. Mm. Anything that was on your person, you couldn't leave with. So this cello has been through quite a lot, and I wish it could, you know, talk, because I'm sure it would have plenty to say and on its experiences and its journeys.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful instrument, and we don't know what it is. You know, there's no label. We know the wood is from the Alps, and we know that it was opened in Czechoslovakia at one point. It was purchased in Vienna, and it made its way all around Europe. So it's really a mystery, but it really sings, and I have a special connection with it.
Well, it's just an incredible story, and it certainly colors one's perception of the music when they hear you playing this particular cello. I want to mention also, you have a pretty prominent social media presence on Instagram, and I've read this in your bio, and I took a look at your Instagram page. Now, I saw the video you did of the Happy Birthday medley, and that was for your grandmother, right? For her 100th birthday.
That was my grandmother, Mariana Popper, who was, you know, my grandfather's wife. His name was Robert Popper. She just turned 100 a couple weeks ago, and you know, we're just so fortunate and blessed to have her with us still. And you know, she's just a really wonderful light for our family, and you know, it was really special to make that for her and send it to her. And unfortunately, I couldn't be with her in person this year because of all of the travel restrictions and logistics. But, you know, it was really special to do that. And whenever I'm home for her, I always play for her, and I'll just practice for her for a couple hours, and she loves it. And she always checks in on me and asks if I'm still practicing every day. And so... No, thank you for asking. It was a really special time.
I like how you did it in sort of a sonata form, with the middle movement being a little Beethoven mixed in with the Happy Birthday.
Yes, a little Moonlight Sonata.
Yeah, that's lovely. Some of your other videos on there, it's interesting to look at social media presence of different performers and the way that they present themselves as performers. And you're doing this thing called the 1,000-Day Journey, which is kind of a take on what other performers have done, showing their practicing and learning music and what have you. But you've got some interesting camera angles. Like, you have the camera set, you know, like we're watching you from the bottom of the strings, you know, looking up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, do you just sort of make that up as you go along, or do you plan them out? How do you approach making these little videos?
I would say it's a combination of both. You know, I like to... The reason that I wanted to explore that is because I really like cinematography, and I love, you know, films that have really beautiful cinematography. And I thought, what if I, you know, tried this on cello, and what if I captured it in a way that isn't... You don't really see every day. And so that's why, you know, I tried the bottom of the strings, and sometimes I'll go from above. But I would say every day... You know, depending on the music I'm playing, I'll think, you know, this would look really interesting if I just came at it right from above the fingerboard. Or, you know, if I show them the left hand movement in this particular passage. Mm. Or sometimes I'll put the camera right next to the bow, to where you can really see the bow movement. So, you know, I thought, you know, as a non-musician, what would I want to see, and what kind of technical or you know, visual aspects would be interesting to see from different vantage points.
Yeah.
So it's been fun to play around with, but every day, you know, as you said, it's a little different, and I like to sort of decide on the spur of a moment what would, you know, be good.
Yeah. Well, you've got over 55,000 followers on your Instagram page. We'll link to that. It's at Cello Crawford. Lots of interesting stuff there. Now, let's get back to the album and talk about these other two pieces. You know, when you look at it, you see three composers who, on the surface, would seem to be very different. Jerzy Ligeti and Dmitri Shostakovich and Johannes Brahms. You've tied them together with this idea of the dialogue, and we talked about Ligeti and his sort of unrequited love that runs through his solo sonata. On the flip side, you've got Shostakovich, who also wrote his cello work during a difficult time in his life. Can you tell us a little about that?
Absolutely. So this, it's similar to the Ligeti in the sense that it was born out of this idea of falling in love with a young student. And in this case, it was a young translator. But at the time, Shostakovich was already married.
Yeah.
And so upon hearing about this, you know, Shostakovich and his wife divorced for a time when she became aware of this. And as you could imagine, you know, this sonata being written during that period of separation, it's it's very desolate at times. And, you know, the third movement in particular is this kind of soliloquy. And this concept of dialogue comes back in a sense, in a sort of non-traditional sense, that Shostakovich is speaking to himself almost. He's communicating with different phrases and he's responding to himself. Why did I do this? Or, you know, here's what I'm feeling. And so, you know, the cello line is kind of the protagonist in this sense, and reflects Shostakovich's frame of mind, kind of frustration, searching, isolation. And so I think that's one element of dialogue that maybe is less obvious, that is interesting to point out, that we can have dialogue with ourselves. And, you know, the whole theme of dialogue, I sort of came up with this idea, piecing it together with, you know, this past year with the pandemic. There was so much isolation and so much, you know, separation from other people that highlighting this concept of dialogue, I think, is really important so that we, you know, make sure to communicate with one another, keep dialogues happening. And dialogue was really the thing that I think kept us going in a sense. And, you know, the ability to talk with people over the phone and over the internet. It's hard to imagine what it would have been like if we didn't have some of these technologies.
You mentioned the pandemic, and I've spoken with countless musicians over the past year, and they've told me how it's affected them. But you are a young musician. You're pretty much toward the beginning of your career. How has this presented challenges to you to keep developing, as it were?
Well, I'd say for each individual, you know, musician, it's probably posed different challenges, but the one that is probably universal is the fact that, you know, the summer before the pandemic began, I had been fortunate to win the Prieto competition and also the Classical Recording Foundation prize. And, you know, as a result of those awards, I was fortunate to be given some performance opportunities and another recording opportunity in addition to this one, which were all scheduled for springtime. And unfortunately, they were all postponed and halted because of the pandemic and, you know, have yet to still be rescheduled. A lot of this performance were going to be in Mexico. And so, you know, I would say hitting pause is one of the more challenging aspects of this. Yeah. Right as you're trying to get your career going, right as some things are kind of helping give you a boost, having to hit pause and, you know, essentially just wait and be patient for when the time comes to ramp things back up, that was really difficult for me. And I think for a lot of musicians, because, you know, you want to get things going, you want to be building and moving in the right direction. But it taught me a lot of patience, and it taught me that, you know, you can't control the world, you can't control everything, and you have to sort of make your best of every situation. So it was definitely a challenge, and, you know, continues to be something that we have to work through.
Well, hopefully this new album will help introduce you to folks who are not familiar with your work and to our listeners as well. Before I let you go, I want to mention the Brahms Sonata, because that is probably the most, you know, squarely in the repertoire of all the pieces that you have on this album. And it really gives your pianist, Victor Asuncion, a chance to shine in relation to the cello. And this is a dialogue also, yeah?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a dialogue, I think, in the more traditional sense, you know, with classical form and nature. And so, especially with the rhythmic motives, you know, you have these, in the very beginning of the Brahms, you have these soaring, singing lines where the cello is sort of reacting to the piano rolls, the piano chords. And then it develops into a different kind of dialogue, into sort of a rhythmic motive, where there's bum, 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 and the piano responding bum, bum, bum. And the pianist and cellist are you can really hear this kind of idea of speech, of speaking to one another, of words and syllables. Mm. And so it's a very kind of microscopic view of dialogue. And this develops in each movement. There's kind of a different variation on that. So in the second movement, it returns to this longer speech-like, this longer vocal line. And then you have the pizzicato come back with these more speech-like motives.
Well, it's a lovely performance, and all three works on here are so well performed. I want to mention the album Dialogo comes out June 4th. It's from Orchid Classics. Cellist John Henry Crawford with pianist Victor Asuncion. And John Henry, I want to thank you for spending some time introducing yourself, bringing this music to our listeners here on FM 91.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Brad. I really appreciate it, and great talking with you.